Welcome back to Anissa's underscore true crime podcast. Thank you for coming back for the second episode. The case I chose for today is the Springfield 3 case. June 6, 1992 was a great day for Stacy and Susanna because they was graduating high school. They were ready to start their life, basically. The two had big plans for the future, but before they were going to enroll into college, they wanted to enjoy the summer, their freedom, before they had to enter adulthood. Later on that day, Susanna and Stacy and a mutual friend, Janelle, made plans to drive 30 minutes away and stay at a hotel and go to Whitewater Water Park and amusement park. But they decided they were going to spend a night at Janelle's house, but they got there and Janelle's family was there because, you know, she's graduating, so their family was there. So they stayed there for a little while. And they stayed until 2 a.m. and they told Janelle that they would continue their plans tomorrow and they'll call her in the morning. The last reported sighting of Stacy and Susanna was around 2:30 on Battlefield Road. Despite it being real, real late, it was really, really, really busy that night because, you know, people was graduating and families in town and it was like really, really busy. It's believed that Stacy and Susanna made it back to their destination. Around 11 to 11:30 p.m., Cheryl, Suzanne's mother, was last heard of around that time. The next day, Janelle called Susanna's house, but there was no answer. So Janelle and her boyfriend, Mike, decided to drive over there to the house. And when they got there, everything looked normal because Susanna's car was there, Stacy's car was there, and Cheryl's car was there in the driveway. So they walked up on the porch, and the front door was wide open, and it was shattered glass everywhere from the porch light. Janelle and her boyfriend went inside. The TV was on, but it was like really, really, you know, it was static. And they walked through the house calling their name, but there was no answer. So they seen their stuff there. They seen their purses, their jewelry, makeup, and everything. The dog was there, but the dog was acting weird. So Janelle thought they left to go to the water park without her. As they was leaving the house phone rung. So Janelle answered it, and the male on the phone was saying like sick things, like sexual things, and she hung up. And her and Mike left. So Janice, Stacy's mom, and Stacy's sister Lisa thought she was at Janelle's house until a relative told her that she was at Susanna's house. And Janice was upset because Stacy told her she was going to be somewhere else, but she wasn't, and she went somewhere else. So Janice carried on with her day, and almost a full day went by, and she still haven't heard anything from her daughter. Due to Susanna and Cheryl moving to another house, she didn't know the address or the phone number, but after searching for a while, through the phone book, she found the number and the address. Janice went over to the house, and once she got there, she seen the same scene that Janelle seen, and it was the glass all over the porch. She went in the house and listened to the calls, and she heard, like, the man kept calling or whatever and leaving messages on the answering machine, and she listened to it. So she called the police. The police came, and once they got there, I guess she accidentally hit the wrong button and it deleted all of the messages he left on an answering machine. So Janice ended up filing a missing person report and was told to come in to the police station the next morning on to tell them about the disappearance and what all did she know, and to get her daughter's dental records, like to bring her daughter's dental records. And that's when Janice got really, 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 really worried because her daughter just disappeared a few days ago, and like 2, 3 days ago, and they already asking for dental records. She was like so worried, like she didn't even sleep that night. Like she stayed up making flyers for all three of them, and she printed out pictures and everything. So the next morning, she went to the station, did all that, and then she put up flyers all over Missouri, and the community started to get involved, and they started helping, and over 40,000 flyers was put up around Missouri. Like it was crazy. So days went by and there was no sight of the girl still. And then a tip came in. A waitress working at Susanna's and Cheryl's favorite breakfast place. Like they went there all the time. Like the waitress knew them, like because it was their favorite place and they always went there. And she claimed to see the three girls on the night of the disappearance between 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. So the police started looking into the background of Susanna, and Cheryl. Susanna had an older brother named Bart. In 1980, he was kicked out of the house because he stayed drunk all the time, and Cheryl did not approve of that. Like, she told him, either you're going to stop drinking or you're going to have to get out of my house. So, Bart moved away for 10 years, y'all, 10 whole years. He moved back to Springfield in 1991 because of a rough breakup with his girlfriend. And he wanted to get back with his family, I guess to make their relationship better or whatever. So Bart and Susanna agreed to get an apartment together, but it went left, y'all. Like he started back drinking again because of the relationship that he just got out of. And Susanna and Bart got in like a real, real, real bad argument. Like it became physical and they got to fighting. And Susanna had enough of it. So she moved back in with her mom. And Bart was the first suspect because, you know, they just got in the fight. And Susanna moved back in with her mom. And he really didn't have nowhere to go because, you know, he was drinking again. So that's why they looked into him. So, but Bart was ruled out. So then they started looking into Susanna's ex-boyfriend, Dustin, and his friend, Michael Clay. While they were in a relationship, the two boys were charged with vandalism. They dug up dead bodies and stole the gold teeth out of the corpse. Like they was crazy. So and they sold them. Like they took the gold teeth and they sold them to a pawn shop. And once Susanna found out about it, she was like, no, I don't want to be with you anymore. So she broke up with him. But Dustin was mad, and Dustin and Michael were heard saying they wish all three of the girls was dead. And but they had a alibi, but it was never confirmed, so no one knows where they was, but they were still suspects, even though there was zero evidence around, like there was zero evidence on them. So around 6 a.m., a woman was sitting on her porch. She came in and said she was sitting on her porch around 6 a.m. and she told them that she saw a van with a woman in a driver's seat. And she was looking scared and she heard the man say, pull out slowly and don't do anything stupid. But the tip wasn't called in fast enough. So they really couldn't do anything with it because it was just like no evidence. Like she seen the van, that was pretty much it. She didn't have a license plate or nothing. So, but because she said she didn't call her in because she didn't know about the case. But sometimes I feel like people be scared to call it in because they don't want to get pulled into the case, you know. But yeah, she said she didn't know about the case, so that's why she didn't call it in. So the police station, the police bought a van that looked similar to the van that the woman was sawing and placed it in front of the police station and had a number to call if you seen a van like that. And they were still searching and looking for them. The story was getting aired throughout the states, like, and it was just getting aired out the states. Like, people was calling and tips was coming in. And then a tip came in from Florida from a teenager. He said his sister, Sharon Zeller, I think I'm saying that right, was 19 years old and was murdered by Robert Cox in 1978 while she was on her way from a late night shift at Disney World. That night, Robert came home with his tongue hanging off. And so his parents rushed him to the hospital. And when he got to the hospital, the doctors asked him, how did his tongue get like that? And he was like, he bit it by accident. But once they looked into it, the way his tongue was bit, he couldn't have done it. So the police was called. And that's when they put two and two together that I guess he was trying to kiss Sharon, and she bit him, and that's how it was hanging off. So he was found guilty, and he got life without parole and was placed on death row. But years later, it was overturned. And because of the lack of DNA evidence, he was released in 1992 and moved in with his parents in Springfield. Like months before the disappearance, he worked at a car lot where Stacy's dad worked. So the police was looking into him because if Stacy's dad worked there, she could have went in and was talking to her dad. And she probably ran into him and probably was talking to him, maybe. And that's probably how she was abducted. But when they talked to Robert's girlfriend, she said they was at church the day that Stacy, Susanna, and Cheryl disappeared. So they really stopped looking into him. Like, you know, they probably put him like back to him, like, as a suspect. He probably was still a suspect, but they weren't really looking at him anymore because they had an alibi. But then, 3 years later, in 1995, Robert was arrested for pointing a gun at a 12-year-old girl. He was sentenced to life in prison. Since he was sentenced to life, the ex-girlfriend that told the police alibi that they was together the day of the disappearance, she came back, she went to the police station and said he wasn't with her, and she lied because he threatened her. So he became a prime suspect again. So they went and interviewed him. And Robert said, I can tell you that I know the three women are dead, and the person that did it has experience, and they were buried in Springfield. So they took the statement serious, but you know, Robert always lied to the police. You know, so they had to like keep it on the back burner to make sure he wasn't lying and that it was for real. So they kept it on the back burner. They kept on investigating. Then, you know, rumors started coming up. And one of the rumors was that the women bodies was buried under the parking lot, the parking garage of the Cox Hospital. Because at that time, when the girls disappeared, they was getting their area ready to build the car garage. So they was like they was buried under there, and then they laid the concrete or whatever. So then there really wasn't anything else they can do until 2010. A reporter got paid her own money, y'all. She paid her own money and got a medical engineer, and he brought a scanner to scan the concrete to see if there was any like anything in the ground. Like they can't see the dead body, but they can see like if there was anything under there. And he scanned the thing, and he seen three humps. And he was like, it looked like he couldn't tell if it was a body, but it resembled like when he did like graveyards, like stuff like that, when he scanned the ground. And he was like, they could be them. Like, it was three humps. It resembled the graveyard that he did before. So they went and told the police. The police was like, you know, they didn't want to destroy the whole parking garage and anything like that. So they really wasn't trying to dig up anything if there wasn't going to be anything under there, because there really was no. I mean, yeah, it was three humps, but it wasn't like picture evidence. Like, it really wasn't any evidence, and they really didn't want to do it to ruin anything. And they was like, they wasn't convinced to further the investigation at this spot. And like the medical engineer was like so into it, like he was going to pay for it, like he wanted to pay for it, like he just knew, like he just knew that the three women was under there. Because what else, like why, I don't know, like just three humps, just three random humps just under there. And they didn't, I guess it would cost a lot of money because they got to tear it down, dig it all up. Maybe it's about to end up, maybe it's not. And it would have been a waste. So I guess that's why the case is still unsolved. And in 2018, the family, like, they never dug up anything around the area. And nobody knows just, like where the women are to this day. There's nothing. Like the police, they still try to investigate it if they get like any tips or anything, but so far there's haven't been anything. And I feel like that Robert, if Robert did this, he didn't do it by himself. And to be honest, like Robert and the Susanna's ex-boyfriend and a friend, they really could have been working together and do all this, because there's no way that Robert could have did this by himself and done all that. So I feel like he probably could have got the two other men to help him, and they could have did that. Because how, if it's just Robert by himself, it would have been like he would have been struggling, because three women, one man, they all could have jumped on him and got away. But I feel like they're probably working together, and I feel like they should look into this case more and like raise money to dig it up. Because I feel like the women probably are under that parking garage, and they can just do it like And if they was to do it, the women are there, like, they could have been solved this case if they're under there and if they dig it up and if they get the money. Because I'm pretty sure they could do fundraisers. Anything. A charity event to raise some money to dig it up. It's just a parking garage. But anyways, thank you for tuning in to the second episode of Anissa's underscore true crime podcast, and I will be back with another one soon.